This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachope. Still a lot of presidential campaigning going on in North Carolina. Republican nominee Donald Trump spoke to a crowd in Kinston yesterday. His running mate Mike Pence visited the state earlier this week. And Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton will make her first joint appearance with First Lady Michelle Obama in Winston-Salem later today. And new polls shows Governor Pat McCrory and his challenger, Attorney General Roy Cooper, in a virtual dead heat. What is each side doing to get voters to the polls? Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry follows the races and joins me now. Welcome back, Jeff.
Good to be back, Frank.
A lot of campaign stops in the state this week from principals as well as surrogates. And not all of these are in expected locations, right?
That's right. Bill Clinton kicked off a five-city tour on Tuesday in the state. And I think that it's fair to look at this as somewhat of a microcosm of what we're seeing on the national level with Hillary Clinton. She is, you know, sending surrogates, and the campaign efforts are getting ramped up in states like Arizona and Georgia and Texas, which I think for many of us is like a joke. Come on, like Texas can't really be in play here, but perhaps it is. And what we're seeing on a smaller local level here in North Carolina is the former president campaigning in places like Rocky Mountain, Goldsboro, and Wilmington, places that are pretty firmly red. But in the Clinton campaign is looking at some of those states elsewhere in the country and some of these areas within North Carolina, thinking, A, they might be in play, and B, what kind of effect could their campaigning have on down-ballot races, be that U.S. Senate, Attorney General, General Assembly races. So they're making a push in other parts of the country and here that, you know, may very well have a spiderweb kind of impact come November.
Down-ballot. Well, yeah. Let's talk about one of those down-ballot races, the Senate race in North Carolina, one of the most watched in the country between Richard Burr and Deborah Ross. That could be one of the races that determines the majority in the U.S. Senate, right?
It could. The U.S. Senate right now is essentially 54 to 46. There are two independents that caucus with Democrats. And I think one thing that hasn't been talked about too much that is important to note is that Democrats need five seats for a majority, for 51 in the U.S. Senate. But if the Democrats win the White House, they only need four, right? Because the vice president, Tim Kaine, would break any tie in the U.S. Senate. So there, you know, according to a number of polling and analytics at this point, there are really six seats that are still in play. So quickly, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Indiana, New Hampshire, and North Carolina. Now, we're not going to have a quiz on this, but what's interesting about those six to me is that Nevada is an open seat. Harry Reid is retiring, open Senate seat. Four of the other five have one-term incumbents. North Carolina is the outlier there. North Carolina is the state where there is a two-term in the U.S. Senate incumbent, Richard Burr, and somebody who's been in Congress for 22 years. He is still leading in the polls. He's got an aggregate lead of about 3.2 percentage points right now. And the pundits, the strategists feel as though he's on the right side of the numbers at this point. But it's still considered a toss-up by most of the people who are far smarter than
us. And the lead, while it's still a comfortable lead, is shrinking as you get closer to Election Day.
It is, and it's within the margin of error. And, you know, I think as recent history, as a reminder, we had this 2014 heated Senate race between Kay Hagan, the incumbent, and Tom Tillis, who was the North Carolina Speaker of the House at that point, one of the most expensive races in the country, maybe the most. I think it was the most expensive race in the country 2 years ago. This race has not elevated to that nature of cost and attention. But that race going in, Hagan had a slight lead, and that's what the polls showed. And sure enough, she lost. Mm-hmm. So this is still very close.
These close races within the margin of error, and another one, the governor's race. A new poll out shows that one is still neck and neck.
I think the October surprise was, maybe there's another one coming with a week left in the month. I think the October surprise was the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew and the ability of the governor to be on television regularly and in the newspapers and, you know, looking confident and talking about what he is going to do, what his administration is going to do to help the state clean up and get back on its feet. And this, I think there's a big factor, and this is playing well for him. The margin of lead that Roy Cooper had for many months is gone. And this is a neck-and-neck race, according to the latest polls, as we head into these, you know, less than 2 weeks now.
There's a libertarian in the governor's race, Lon Cecil, not running a particularly visible campaign and hasn't raised much money.
Right.
Can he be the X factor in a close race like this?
I think he can. I think that is plausible. If you look at 4 years ago, by all accounts, it was a lopsided race. Governor McCrory, then Pat McCrory, beat Walter Dalton, the Democrat, by 500,000 votes. He won by 11.5%. It's not going to be that lopsided this year. It's going to be close. And in a lopsided race, it was 500,000 votes separating the two. This year, it could be 100, 150, 200,000 votes or less than that. 4 years ago, Barbara Howe, the Libertarian, got just about 95,000 votes, or 2.1% of the overall vote. 8 years ago, Mike Munger, the Libertarian, carried almost 3% of the vote. He carried something like 125,000 votes. This year, if these two are really only separated by a percent or two, and you put Lon Cecil in the mix, and historically, Libertarians take more votes from Republicans than they do Democrats, it is possible that Pat McCrory will look back on this race and think, well, if Lon Cecil wasn't in, I would have gotten a second term in the executive mansion.
And we've said this a couple of times already now, but one of the things that the polls really have a hard time accounting for in this particular volatile cycle is voter turnout, mm-hmm. and how that's going to affect the actual voting rather than what people's opinion on who should be governor or senator.
Right. And one of the interesting things, as I've spoken with strategists and political scientists over the last couple of weeks, really several months, and I asked them both, I say, what's the path to victory for re-election for Governor McCrory? And they say he has to do very well in rural areas. He needs to exceed what Mitt Romney did 4 years ago. And, you know, conversely, what is the path to victory for Roy Cooper? And they say, well, he's got to do really well in urban areas. He needs to get good voter turnout and really thump McCrory in Mecklenburg and in Wake County compared to 4 years ago. And it's interesting. I mean, I had one political scientist use the word an anomaly. What happened 4 years ago is that Governor McCrory, then, you know, candidate McCrory, he wins the governorship. He carried Mecklenburg County by 2,500 votes. At the same time, Barack Obama carried Mecklenburg County by 100,000 votes. He carried it by 22%. Mm. That's just bizarre. I mean, it's obviously important to remember McCrory was a seven-term mayor of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the expectation now, as chatting with strategists and political scientists, is that McCrory is going to lose Mecklenburg, and it's not going to be close. He's going to lose Wake, and it's not going to be close. The question is, how much does Cooper win those by, and is that a lead that is insurmountable for him?
Right, and it's interesting to think about that. And you talked about what amounts to, I think, in McCrory's victory, about an 8-point lead or 8-point margin in Mecklenburg, where he had served as mayor. Now you're talking about a 12-point, the possibility, at least at the polls show in Mecklenburg, something like he's behind by 12 points. So that's a 20-point shift in Mecklenburg County. That can be pretty significant.
Right. Well, he
in the polls.
Right. So McCrory actually carried Mecklenburg by just 0.6% 4 years ago. I mean, it was very close. Mm-hmm. And there are other counties, Forsyth being one, you know, one of these urban centers that continues to expand and grow. And, you know, as the population of this state continues to adjust, McCrory carried Forsyth 4 years ago. That's where Winston-Salem is. Yeah. And I want to, if memory is serving, he carried it by about 3 percentage points and 6,000 or 7,000 votes. And that's an area that political scientists have said that's a pretty good one to keep an eye on come election night, because they expect it to lean. They think it's leaning blue. And again, the question is how blue does it finish?
And some legislators down ballot are using the gubernatorial race again to support their races. How is that going to work? Is there a coattails effect from the governor's race?
I guess we'll call it the antithesis of coattails. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing, and Charlotte Observer had a pretty decent piece on this week. There are a number of swing districts in the General Assembly, competitive seats. Again, we're talking primarily about Wake and Mecklenburg counties, where the Democratic challengers are, running these attack ads against Republican incumbents, and they are invoking Governor Pat McCrory's name as saying, you know, this legislator voted for Governor McCrory's bathroom bill. He voted for HB2, and, you know, we need to send this legislator home. So what we're seeing is the Democrats tying the incumbent to the governor in hopes of flipping seats. And ultimately, what's in place there, or what's at stake there in the North Carolina House, is potentially the end of a supermajority, which would mean a different kind of policy in the state for at least the next 2 years.
Early voting started. What are we seeing so far?
We're seeing a lot of Democrats turn out, which has been the case for the past decade. That's not a surprise. In some places, Guilford County, as one example, there are not, it's very limited, the number of early voting options in this first week. So it's been, I think it's about 70% of all early votes have been Democrats thus far. Remember that 4 years ago, 56% of all people that voted in the state voted early. So, you know, we're going to continue to see numbers there will be Democratic leads heading into Election Day. How big are they? And I think one thing that it's tough to study, and we haven't seen any real firm empirical scientific data on it, but how does that affect turnout come November 8th? I mean, if you're an undecided voter, if you're a Republican, if you're not sure you're going to go, and you see that two-thirds of the people who have voted in your county or in X area have voted a certain way, does that deter you from voting? Or does it just motivate you to say, now I really need to get out there and vote? So, anyway.
Jeff, always a pleasure. Jeff DeBerry, WUNC Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Just ahead, a talk with Attorney General candidate Josh Stein. You'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.